Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, people, thank you so much for hanging out with the second hour. For you people that did hold on, I'm still kind of out of breath from that first interview of that precious man, Jason Bartley, who's come all the way over here from South Africa to try to raise attention of really global white genocide, with the poster child being in South Africa. I mean, what's going on in South Africa right now? If you want to know what's going to be going on here in the United States 10, 15, 20 years when we become a minority, just listen to what Mr. Bartlett said, because it's coming to a little town near you. And you know what, you people out there, you weak-hearted people, you fence-sitters, you cowards, you know, it's going to come to you, because you know why? Because you won't lift a damn finger to help. You sat there, you think you can hide under your bed, get under your cover and run and maintain your little normie lifestyle. Well, they're going to get you too, buddy. And you know what? I just hope the hell they get the normies first before they get us. You know, we're starting a different, we're switching gears right now. My wonderful friend, my little spirit son, Jason Robb is with me tonight. And we're going to bring on the one and only Paul Fromm from Canada. And Jason Robb is going to pretty much drive this interview. How are you tonight? How are you doing tonight, Mr. Paul Fromm?
I'm doing very well, thanks, and I'm really glad to be on your show tonight.
Well, I'm glad to have you too, and I know you are all too familiar with the one and only Jason Robb. He's a little bit younger than you and I, but he's gonna be driving pretty much this interview tonight. He sent me a wonderful list of questions he'd like to ask you, so therefore I'm gonna reintroduce you to Mr. Jason Robb, and he's going to take off on this interview. So what do you have to say about that, Sonny boy? You were here with two old guys.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to handle it. but no, I've known Paul several years now. And what's funny is I think I maybe have met him probably about 12 or 13 years ago, somewhere there. But he used to be one of our keynote speakers at the Faith and Freedom Conference here before he was not able to enter the United States here recently. But I have a picture of Paul Fromm and my son Caleb, about 2 years old, in my office. And I always believe that as a family person, as a father, we always should surround our families with our heroes, and our family definitely looked at Paul Fromm as a hero of our people in the white nationalist movement in Canada. And so I think a lot of Mr. Fromm, and I know my father and my sister Rachel, we think highly of Paul Fromm, all the things he has done for our people and just helping trying to waken our people up. And so I'm just really blessed to know Paul Fromm. And hopefully people here, if this is the first time tuning into Blood River Radio, you know, when they hear about Paul Fromm, that they will look him up and get more information about Mr. Fromm and all the great work he's doing, not only in Canada, but just worldwide. And so, Paul, we're glad that you're on Blood River Radio. And I like to ask you, when I was talking to Eddie Miller about you being on here and stuff like that, I thought that it would be good for people kind of know your background a little bit. You know, they know that you're a white rights activist in Canada, but I don't think that people know your background and how you came about starting your organization in Canada. And so I was wanting to let you kind of talk for a few minutes about your background and how you became racially aware.
Well,
you were a former school teacher, right?
Yes. Well, I've been racially aware from pretty much from the get-go. I've seen my own city absolutely transformed in a revolutionary way in 1960. Let's just take that as an arbitrary date. Toronto was about 99% European. In fact, it was sometimes called Little Belfast. Well, as of several years ago, Toronto is now majority non-white. And this is all because of the engineered replacement of white people by the government's immigration policy beginning in 1965. Here, the same year as in the States. So, I was racially aware quite early on. And, of course, I had dealings with many Americans and racial nationalists down in the States, like Sam Dixon and others. So, it wasn't one moment where I kind of changed my opinion. It's just what I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And with you being in Canada, you mentioned about the drastic shift of some of the bigger cities in Canada becoming non-white. Do you see where there are people, what we would call your traditional white Canadians? Do you see them where they are starting to realize about all the immigration that's coming into Canada, how it's affecting their own country? You know, we talk about America, but in Canada, I mean, your major cities, how the globalization of introduction of your non-whites coming into Canada and just really drastically shifting the racial demographics. I mean, do you see that happening, where white Canadians are realizing what's happening?
Yes. The public opinion polls show that the vast majority of Canadians want less immigration. And see, unlike the United States, we have very, very large immigration compared to our numbers. We're 1/9 your size in terms of population. We're 38 million. And we are bringing in almost 1% of the population each year. The official immigration is about somewhere around 350,000, although the actual numbers are much higher. So we're bringing in immigration far faster than you are. Now, we started off whiter, as I say, 1961, let's say. We're 98% European or white. You were 90%. You're down to 61%, and whites will be a minority in the United States unless something as drastic is done by about 2041. In Canada, the D-Day will be 2050 or a bit before. But what will have happened is that within our lifetimes, the traitors, the globalists, will basically have put us into a minority situation. This is genocide on the installment plan. There's no nice way to put it.
Right. Now you heard the first hour. We had this Jason Bartlett talking about the literally the thousands of over 100,000 of white families, white people basically butchered and murdered and raped in South Africa.
Hey Jason, hold that thought, Jason. We're going to a break. Y'all probably can't hear the music. People, we're going to a break. And hold on to your seat. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. Can't wait to get back myself. I'm enjoying this night. Jason Robb is making my night easy. Be right back in a few minutes, people.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q, The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q, The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-7000. 2000.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
Well, people, I guess you've heard me say this many a times. My day is being made because I have two marvelous gentlemen, two great warriors, two good Christian warriors on the line right now. One of them is really helping me immensely. The wonderful Jason Rupp. Jason, why don't you give the people, we forgot to give them your little bio because, you know, this fellow, even though he's a lot younger, but he's younger than my youngest child. He happens to be a high-powered attorney. Tell him a little bit about yourself, Jason.
Well, of course, my name is Jason Rahm, and I live here in Harrison, Arkansas, and I'm an attorney here in Harrison, and I've been attorney for about 20 years. My father is Pastor Thomas Rahm, and he's the national director of the Knights Party and the senior pastor of the Christian Revival Center here in Arkansas. And my mom and dad both have raised our family in this white nationalist cause, instilling in us a sense of love for race, faith, and family. We have several conferences throughout the year, the Faith and Freedom Conference, which you'll be speaking here in April. And we've had Paul Fromm, who's spoken here several times over the years as our keynote speakers, and we're hoping that we can get him back here in the United States. Right now he's banned from coming into the United States, but we're hoping we can get him back in the United States and be our speaker again. Paul Fromm also is a host on altrighttv.com, The Fighting Side of Me. And so as far as me, you know, our families have always been involved in this movement. I don't know anything different. And so my dad and mom has always done a good job in just surrounding people that loves our family, loves our race, and loves our culture. And so I've been blessed, been raised in a family like that. And so that's kind of, in a nutshell, my background as well.
That's a wonderful background, too. You know, I have a quick question out there. I'd like to just ask why, pray tell, is a gentleman like Paul Fromm, I've met Paul Fromm in person, and you would never want to meet a kinder, nicer gentleman. Why is Paul banned from coming to the United States? I mean, what's the deal with that, Paul?
What I was going to say is apparently they don't like anyone that wants to speak for people and free speech and speak for our race. I guess that's why they don't like Paul Fromm. I guess they believe that he might move the masses into loving their people.
You ask a good question. It's certainly a question I asked. I began to have trouble shortly after the shootings at Charleston, South Carolina. And now the only thing I've ever been told is that I've not convinced them that I have permanent ties in Canada. Now that's just bullshit. Good to be quite blunt about it. I own a house. I've got family. I have an organizations in Canada. I'm not about to sneak down to the United States to compete with Mexican labor picking lettuce in California. I mean,
I needed that. By God, I needed that laugh.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I've never stayed in the United States longer than 11 straight days. So this is a completely bogus argument. And it's, of course, something that, I mean, you can't disprove. What constitutes permanent ties in Canada? I own a house. Wouldn't that be permanent? I pay taxes in Canada. Wouldn't that be... anyway, that's all they've ever told me. My guess is that one of the pressure groups, probably the SPLC, has dropped a dime on me. And as you say, they simply don't want people who are going to promote white pride. They don't like, there's all sorts of Europeans banned. And this is happening all over the Western world. One of the most repressive places is England. Jared Taylor's banned. I'm banned. Mark Weber's banned. These two young videographers, Lauren Southern and Brittany Pettibone, and they're not really hardcore. I mean, they're sort of nationalists, but they're not hardcore. They're banned. I mean, there's a pretty much a direct line from the Jewish lobby in Britain to the Prime Minister's office, and it's probably easier for me to get into North Korea than to get into England. not that I've tried to get into North Korea, not that I'd want to, but
now, Paul, you have an organization called the Canadian Association for Free Expression.
Yes.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about that?
Okay, we have a big problem with free speech in Canada. It's under constant attack, both by government and by people who don't appreciate free speech. So we spend a lot of our time trying to get lawyers for people who are in problems in regards to free speech. And we make representations in the government bodies. We do protests, and we also intervene in some cases. I think what Americans would call the act as an amicus curiae.
Right.
Yeah. I'd like to say we don't have much to do, but that wouldn't be true. And so, I kind of smile when somebody, well-meaning or naive person says, we live in a free country. And I take them aside and say, you don't really believe that, do you? If we're in a free country, why is a Christian pastor, my friend, Bill Watcott, facing perhaps 2 years in jail under Canada's notorious hate law for criticizing homosexuals? He attended a gay pride parade. He infiltrated the parade. He's a really clever guy. He and a couple of other Christians dressed up in lime green bodysuits, and they called themselves the gay zombies. And they handed out Bible tracts, and the tracts talked about what the Bible says about homosexuality. And then the other side of the tract had the statistics, mostly from the Centers for Disease Control, about the bad results of homosexual practice.
Right.
Lovely things like anal cancer, anal warts, higher levels of alcoholism, higher levels of drug use, higher levels of suicide, etc. I mean, it's just not a choice to promote. He could face 2 years in prison. So when somebody says, "We live in a free country," I said, "What sort of free country would put a gentle, non-violent person testifying to the word of the Lord in prison?" I mean, not a free country.
In Canada, I mean, most people are not aware that Canada has some of the strictest laws against free speech. The hate laws that you're talking about in Canada, I mean, it's something as simple as if they believe that you're directing a hateful message or hateful comment towards a particular group, that you could be criminally charged.
Yes, it has to go over a certain threshold, but the way the law reads is willfully promoting hatred against any of a whole list of privileged groups like race, religion, sex, sexual orientation,
right.
It doesn't cover white people. I mean, in reality, no matter what the words say, white people are not protected, and Christians are not protected.
Right.
You can say anything you want about Christians.
Sure.
Well, guys, there's the music. We are going to another break. When we come back, I'm going to ask a question to both of you young fellows. I'm sure both of y'all are younger than I am. But anyway, people, hang on to your seats. We'll be right back after this little break here. Thank you.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with John Hunt.
Democratic presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg said that he's willing to release at least three women from non-disclosure agreements that prevented them from speaking publicly about harassment or discrimination suits filed against him over the last three decades. Bloomberg was attacked repeatedly this week in his debut debate for declining to release women from those non-disclosure agreements. He also said his company will not offer confidentiality agreements to resolve claims of sexual harassment or misconduct in the future. Marie Yovanovitch, who was ousted from her post as U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, has signed a book deal. Yovanovitch was a key witness in the House inquiry that led to President Donald Trump's attempted impeachment. The book is scheduled to be published in the spring of 2021. Financial terms were not disclosed, but people familiar with the deal told the Associated Press the agreement was worth over seven figures. This is USA Radio News.
Welcome to Tax Talk with Hollywood legend Bob Eubanks.
You know, as part of Hollywood for a long time, I've seen my fair share of celebrities get in trouble with the IRS. Well, there's one name I trust, the Tax Defense Group. They're the most trusted name in tax. So if you owe more than $10,000 to the IRS, you really need to call my friends at the Tax Defense Group. Ignoring the IRS is not the solution. They can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, seize your home or business. But the Tax Defense Group could put a stop to all of that and tailor a program that would reduce your tax debt to pennies on the dollar. You gotta love that. So don't just take my word for it. Call them. Find out for yourself. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And they're open 24 hours a day because they know that tax debt doesn't sleep either.
Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis from the most trusted name in tax. Call 800-832-1594. 800-832-1594.
A man who was wrongfully convicted of murder was released from prison last week and is now suing the state of New York for $100 million. Despite the confession from another man 16 years ago, it took more than a decade for Christian Pacheco to be freed. Pacheco said he was at the New York City bar when someone cut the throat of Lemanuel Cruz in 1995. He was convicted of the crime in 1996 on the testimony of the bar's bouncer. Years later, other gang members came forward to give their account of the deadly fight, naming Melvin Garcia as the murderer. Garcia was eventually arrested during a federal investigation into the Latin Kings, but it would take 15 years for Pacheco to be free. The jurors in the trial against Harvey Weinstein indicated they were deadlocked on the two most serious counts against him, prompting the judge to order that any verdict be unanimous. New York Supreme Court Judge James Burke added, if the jury can't reach a unanimous decision, then it can't return a verdict on two counts of predatory sexual assault that carry a maximum penalty of life in prison. This is USA Radio News.
The Innis is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, people, I sure appreciate you holding on to the break. I'm just going to ask a quick question here. You know, people, as you well know, at Blood River Radio, this is Dresden Month. All month we've been celebrating Dresden Month. And to close out a Dresden Month, next week, on the 29th, we will have the one and only Monica Schaefer coming on. She is a former political prisoner, and she's also been elected the president. She's the new president of the Truth and Justice for Germans in Canada. I know Paul Fromm knows her real well. Matter of fact, it was Paul Fromm who was gracious enough to put us on to Miss Monica Schaefer. She'll be coming on next week. And, you know, this being Dresden Month, and while our listener, our guest 2 weeks ago said that really every day, every month, every year should be Dresden Month, should be Dresden Day. I agree with him because, and I'm getting ready to get my question. You know, Blood River Radio, our mission is to fight global white genocide. Our flagship, I've said this 100 times, our flagship crusade is South Africa. Now I'm going to ask these guys a question that I have on the line right now, Paul and Jason. Now, you know what went on in Dresden, Germany, in Hamburg? Germany was bombed to a cinder, firebombed. They tried to kill FDR, Churchill. They tried to kill as many, and Eisenhower, tried to kill as many women, children, men in Germany as they possibly could. It was a genocide there. Now, guys, do you think the people that were in control of what went on in Dresden, in Hamburg, do you think those same people, their progeny, are alive? Their organizations, are they the ones driving the flooding of Canada, United States, Europe, Australia? Is that the same group that was responsible for killing the white people in Europe, Germany, or the Dresdenites? Are they the ones behind flooding all the white nations with all these colored people and attacking all the Christians right now? What do you say, Paul?
Well, the primary responsibility for the attack on Dresden, and it was not a military target. There's no arms manufacturing. There was over 600,000 refugees that had poured in from the east. The person responsible was Winston Churchill. And he said he wanted to roast the German people. He used that word. And he, you know, the war was virtually over. It was February 13, 1945. Germany was being invaded. The Allies had crossed the Rhine in the west. The Soviets were within, I think, about 70 miles of Berlin. It basically was over. To immolate probably 300,000 people in an unprotected city. That is just, it's mass murder. He is largely responsible for that. I'm not sure if that exactly answers your question, but it forms part of a long pattern of attacks on European people. And basically, our genocide is what they want. The master plan for the European Union was laid out by a man named Richard Count Coutenhove-Kalergi in the 1920s. He did it with very significant backing from Jewish bankers, including the Warburgs and the Rothschilds. And his goal, he laid it out. I mean, it's very, very clear. He said, he wanted to abolish nationality, so there'd be no more Italians or Germans or French or English or people like that. and there would be a new European man who would be a mix of Oriental and African, and he would look like an ancient Egyptian. And that's what the clergy said. And that there would be a new moral elite, and these would be Jews. So the only way you could get a Europe like that, which, you know, when he wrote this in 1922, was overwhelmingly white, you know, like probably 99.5% white. The only way you're going to get that is massive third world immigration. And that's exactly what Europe has had since the 1970s. And people like German Chancellor Angela Merkel and the French President Macron are fanatically for this immigration. Like Merkel brought in over a million Africans and Middle Easterners to Germany a couple of years ago. They are the true, you know, sons and daughters of clergy, and the game plan is the replacement of the European people. And exactly, isn't that exactly what's happening in North America? The replacement of the European founding settler people by the third world, and we have less than 30 years to turn this around. I mean, our situation is desperate.
You know, Paul, before we go to Jason, your president Trudeau, if I'm pronouncing his name right, he said something like, "I had a sheet. I had a whole library of them. I can't put my hands on it right now." So I'll just paraphrase what he said. He said that the old white stock in Canada are a dying breed. They're kind of obsolete. They need to go. And he said they're going to go, and they're going to bring. And he said he was going to facilitate this bringing in all these white, not white people from all over the world. He didn't care where they come from, as long as they're not white. You're absolutely right. Now the question, Jason, I'm going to ask you a question. Is kind of similar to the one I asked Paul a minute ago. You know, we talk about the hideous, just the unspeakable horror of the firebombings of Germany in World War II that they served only one purpose. There was no military purpose behind that. Just it's been proven. We've had guests on our show, two different guests on two different weeks that prove that. They were there. It was done. Hamburg, Germany, etc., just to kill as many white people as possible. Now, my question to you, Jason, is there a connection with the people that did that? Are their descendants still alive? Is it an organization? Is it Satan? I mean, what is it? And I don't even know if that's a relevant question, but what do you have to say about it, Jason?
Well, I believe there is. I mean, I believe that you have these Jewish supremacists out there that are wanting to naturally destroy white Christians. And so what happened, of course, in Dresden, I mean, they literally just bombed them and annihilated them, over 300,000, because they hated, I mean, there was such a hatred towards Germany because Germany represented a white Christian country. The world basically was in debt, and Germany was thriving. So you had your economic issue there where Germany was thriving, and so they literally wanted to destroy that representation of government. And you see that happening now where there is this inherent ability by these Jewish supremacists wanting to destroy any symbolism of white Christianity. And so that is the reason they are flooding our European countries, our white European countries, with non-whites. It's a population replacement. That is genocide. I mean, one of the definitions of genocide under the United Nations is the intentional act of trying to destroy, not physically, but destroy the culture or a heritage of a particular group. That is what's happening with all our white European countries, is they are literally trying to destroy, and if they can't do it by literally killing them, they will do it by replacing with another group, and that's what happened. So it is definitely the same people. They have an inherent ability and a justification to kill and replace our people. I mean, and that's literally what is happening. And so you don't have to go out there and just be killing our people. You can destroy them over a period of time, and that is what's happening as well.
You know, I guess this question could be for both of y'all. I'll ask you, Jason, first. What are some solutions that we can, what can we do to counteract this? You know, as right now, and I'll preface my question with, we are under an almighty military state, and we're under a microscope. Anything, Sam and I have talked during the break. Everything we say is just magnified. They put us under an electron microscope. They're looking for every possible excuse to destroy us, to get rid of Blood River Radio. They would love to get rid of Blood River Radio. They would love to get rid of Sam's show. They would love nothing more than to put us in prison. That statement, what can we do? When we come after a break, Jason, and then we'll go to Paul after you answer. What can we do? Is it hopeless? Anyway, people, they're gonna answer my question when we come back from this break. So please hold on and keep listening. Be right back in a few minutes.
You've heard the name Lavoie Finicum. Now, hear Lavoie Finicum in his own words.
Honor the Republic. Uphold this Constitution. Let us quit talking. Please take peaceful action. That is why I'm here.
Liberty Hall Lectures presents Dead Man Talking, screening and fundraiser. Come together with us to view the newly completed DVD series, Lavoie, Dead Man Talking, Episode 2, Friday, February 28th at 6 p.m. at Liberty Hall in Far West Utah. Come meet Lavoie Finicum's widow, Jeanette. Learn about her mission to bring about justice for the wrongful murder of her husband. That's Friday, February 28th, 6 p.m. at Liberty Hall, 3677 North, Highway 126 in Far West Utah. There's no need to RSVP. Admission is free, and your generous donations are appreciated. Join us Friday, February 28th at 6 p.m. at Liberty Hall. This event is sponsored by One Cowboy Stand for Freedom, the Center for Self-Governance, and the Loving Liberty Radio Network. Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no more.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
I couldn't hear the music. Well, people, I guess we're right back. We had temporarily the music. We were doused. Our music was doused a little bit. Couldn't hear. Anyway, Jason, go to that question. If you remember the question I asked you before we went to the break. Go right back to that, and what can we do other more than what? Is there anything we can do more? What solutions are there out there?
Well, I mean, as far as us individually, as far as organizations, obviously, what we are able to do is continue to what we hear with our group. You know, we like to call it White Christian Revival. Spread this wonderful message of White Christian Revival to our people. So, getting out there, talking to people, shows, I'm getting involved in organizations, contributing to organizations. That's probably one of the biggest things that our people do not do is contribute to white national organizations. Our people are naturally tightwads, and we need to be understand that there is literally killings of our people happening worldwide, and you have to get involved. That's what we can do individually. But I'm going to take a look at more of a religious standpoint. Until our people recognize that they have that they love their people and they love their God and have that sense of really pride in themselves as our people, and have a sense of desire to preserve their culture and preserve their race, then our people will start waking up. And that's from a religious standpoint. Here at the Christian Revival Center, we believe that the two greatest commandments that God talks about is loving God and loving our people. And then what we see, basically, the two greatest sins that we are seeing today is race mixing and homosexuality. Those are the two greatest sins that we are seeing today because it's a sin against nature. And until our people recognize that, until our people understand it, until our people realize that we actually have to turn away from those sins, race mixing and homosexuality, which is the two greatest sins, and have that love for our people, then I believe that is what will help resonate with our people and wake them up. I think we are starting to see that in somewhat because we see this polarization of our people happening, and a lot of that has occurred with Donald Trump because he really has become a person that people look at from our enemy's standpoint. They look at him as someone who's a racist and a bigot and everything else. Now, we know he's not a white nationalist. We all know that. But that's what they have made him out to be. And we see our people starting to realize through immigration that they are starting to lose their culture. They're starting to lose their homeland. And there is a stirring upon our people. I think that is something that is positive. But until our people literally starts wanting to have that sense of love for our people, we're going to continue to see this atrocity upon our people. So that's a religious standpoint, how I'm going to look at it. But individually, we have to recognize that we have to reach our people with a sense of love, a sense of passion, let our people know that there are people out there wanting to preserve their culture and their race. We have to do that on a daily basis.
Paul, what do you have to say about that, fella?
Yeah, so much of what Jason said, I completely agree with. I see our leadership role as, among other things, trying to gently connect the dots for people. I think sometimes people who become white nationalists sometimes become maybe a little bit too self-righteous. I get it. Why don't you? You're a sheeple. You're stupid, and so on. And in some cases, people are stupid. But quite often, I think it's a matter of helping people see. Interesting things happen in a bar. I was in a sports bar a couple of years ago, and the guy who served me was a nice looking young guy. And I thought, what are you doing? Guy in your 20s, waiting tables. I thought, maybe he's a student. Well, he said, no, he'd come out here to Calgary. I was out west at that time. And he'd come from Ottawa to be with his girlfriend. And he said he wanted to be a policeman. I said, why aren't you a policeman? He said, when he graduated from university, he went to apply to become a policeman. And he said, they just weren't looking for people like me. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, he was trying to be delicate, but he said, well, you know, like white male. I said, oh, yeah. He said, well, you know, I guess it's white privilege. I thought, honest to God, do you really believe that? They've messed with your mind there at university. I said, wait a sec. You think you've got white privilege? Friend, you were denied the job because you were white. You don't have any privilege. It's the chosen minorities, the blacks or the East Indians or whatever they were. Topic du jour that day. They're the ones with the privilege. You're not. You know, I could see the light go on. So, you know, I see our role often is helping people to realize they're dispossessed. And there's something else that Jason said that is oh so true. Once you realize, then you've got no choice. You have got to fight to preserve your race. I mean, I guess you can choose not to. You can choose suicide, I suppose. But I can hear people say, yeah, but I can't do anything. I've got a job, and you know, if people know I'm this or that, they'll I'll get fired, and they may well be right. That it's a very we're at war, and our enemies are ruthless. That doesn't let you off the hook just because. Okay, you can't go out front like Jason or I do, or Blood River, the folks at Blood River Radio. Doesn't let you off the hook. You can write a check. You can help from behind the scenes, and we all have to contribute. And you know, one of the problems in the nationalist movement and the free speech movement is that we're chronically short of money, and people have to people have to be brought to realize that this is a battle for our survival. And what's your survival worth?
Right.
You know, Paul.
I mean, no, my dad will always say that's like a soldier out there in the battlefield, you know, firing, and he keeps on saying, hey, I need more bullets. And the person that's giving him bullets saying, oh, he's always complaining that he needs more bullets. It's the same thing. We constantly need money. I mean, we have to have money to support organizations to get our message out there. And so
that's great.
You're absolutely right. This is a joke I've told with some modifications for years, but I think it makes a point. Hello?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I think that's what 90% of the people out there in the white nationalist movement, they cannot be out public. They cannot do it because, like you said, Paul, you know, they have a job and everything else, but they financially, they have a duty to support organizations, tithing. That is something that they have an obligation. And if they don't do that, then like you said, they are literally turning their back from the fight, and they're turning back their back to white families out there that we're seeing this literally being genocide out there, like we see in South Africa. And so we as people have to support our organizations. It's not 5, 10, 15 bucks a month. No, the Bible says that we have an obligation of a 10% tithe, and that does not literally mean just for a church. That means our racial brothers and sisters out there that's taking the fight not only to the street but in the airwaves. And so literally people should be giving $50, $60, $70 a week of their paycheck, their tithe, 10%, if they're able to do that, to our cause. That's their obligation and their duty. And so often within our movement, we do not like talking about that because of the fact that our people have a tendency to be very tight with their pocketbooks.
But you know, you're absolutely right. But the story goes that heaven turns out to be white nationalist. So this fellow, who's always been very, very cheap, dies, and he ends up at St. Peter, the angel Gabriel. The angel Gabriel said, "Well, what did you do to support the white nationalist movement in when you were on Earth? You were very wealthy. You're a multimillionaire." He thinks and thinks and thinks and thinks, and finally says, "In 1980."
89, I gave 25 cents to Pastor Tom Roth. So he did do something, but it wasn't much. So he flies up to St. Peter and asks St. Peter, what should I do with this multimillionaire who never did anything for the white nationalist movement? Well, he did give 25 cents to Pastor Tom Roth 30 years ago. And the angel gave, St. Peter says, that's easy. Go back, give him his quarterback and tell him to go to hell.
I love that. Well, guys, we're coming to the end of the show. Paul, would you like to make a final comment before we're gone for the night?
If people would like to be in touch with me, rather than a website, I'll give you my email because it's easier to remember. It's paul@paulfromm.com. paul@paulfromm.com. Shoot me an email. Say you'd like more information, and we'll touch base. I'll give you the websites and so on. I'd love to be in touch with you. It doesn't matter where you live. We're all in this together, and we can all learn from each other.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. Thank you so much. And Jason, guess what? I never called you Jacob one time tonight. Well, thank you so much, Jason. And thank you so much, Paul. I wish my luck. People, tune in same time, same place next week. God willing, we'll be here. Thank you so much.